Now I would like to switch to the employee perspective. And here I have another interview partner, which is Brian McGann. He is representing the employees, and he is from SIPTU. Brian is head of the organization development in SIPTU, which is the largest trade union and represents workers across all industries. So this is very interesting. And Brian is also director at IDEAS Institute, a company which specializes in workplace innovation training and research. So we see here is also a very rich background. And he has a long, long experience working for 30 years across all these sectors. So he has really a very good insight. And yeah, we would be happy. We would really be happy to talk to him. Thank you very much, Brian, for being here with us.
Thank you, Lisa.
And yeah, we are very happy to know your experiences. Do you see a preference for remote work or for hybrid work? We learned something about hybrid work right now, hybrid meetings and distribution from one perspective, HR. Now we would like to look into your perspective representing the employees. What do you think?
Well, I suppose, I mean, it depends sometimes on the job that you do as to whether you can work remotely or in a hybrid way. If your job is to serve customers at a checkout in the supermarket, you've got to sit at the checkout till and help them unless they use self-service checkout. But I suppose, in my experience, I found there are some people who would love to work remotely forever. And as Pedro said, if they never saw the inside of an office, they'd be more than happy. There are other people who never want to do anything other than to work in the office. They want to come to work in the office 5 days a week. And then in the middle of that is probably the largest group who like the opportunity to work from home sometimes, but like to be in the office as well. For some of the week as well. And I think the majority of people probably who can work in that way are probably comfortable, you know, maybe not coming into the office on a Monday or a Friday. So, you know, you don't really have to get yourself into the city traffic on a Monday morning and sit there for 2 hours trying to get into an office. And
Yeah.
likewise, you don't have to spend 2 hours trying to get home on a Friday evening. So people like that sort of flexibility. But it very much depends on people. And ironically, I found myself, most of my life I've worked in a hybrid way. I've traveled a lot, so I work from all sorts of places. I travel around the country, travel abroad. And so I've done that. But when COVID came,
Yeah.
I was forced to work from home. He hated it. Absolutely hated it.
All what is forest.
It was just, and perhaps it was because everybody was at home. My children were at home. My wife was at home, and you know, with the kitchen and the dining room and kids in their bedrooms, and the
Yeah.
Wi-Fi wouldn't work properly because everybody was on it, and maybe it was a little bit of that. But I mean, the flexibility to be able to work when and where you want is I think something that people have realized is a possibility after COVID. I mean, when COVID hit, we just had to get everybody set up remotely. And in our organization, we weren't set up for that. For the union, about two-thirds of the employees would be trade union officials. And their job would be they'd be on the road, they'd be meeting employers, they'd be out and about. So they'd have laptops and they'd be used to working wherever they found themselves. And then about a third of our employees were administrative and support staff, and they worked in the office and they had desk-based computers. And so there was a huge sort of rushing around at the time trying to buy a whole load of laptops to give to people so that they could actually work. And of course every other organization was looking for laptops at the time as well, so that was a bit frantic for a while, but we got there. And then we set people up, and you know, bit by bit people started to get used to that. But we did find it took people, you know, quite a while to get used to it. And sometimes when you'd have meetings, the staff wouldn't turn their screens on. They didn't want to turn the screens on. They didn't want people to see them on the screen. And it took us a while to get people over that, to say, no, everybody should turn their screen on, you know, and
yes,
so other people can see them and that sort of thing. but I think, interestingly, I suppose the concept of remote working was forced upon us really by, or the acceleration of it was forced upon us by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, in the last year, the CIPD did some research that they published earlier this year. And they found that in the last year, there were twice as many organizations who are allowing a majority of their staff to work from home. Now we've, you know, we're at some distance from COVID at this stage. So the idea is starting to gain some traction with companies as well as with workers, and people are starting to get used to how do you do that. And I was listening to, you know, talking there, and clearly, yeah, he's in the sort of industry where people have probably tended to do that, as he said, you know, more. So it's been more perhaps structured, and people know their way around it a bit. But for people who had never done it, it's quite difficult. It's quite
yes.
you have to be very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work at home, you could start working at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you could be working at 8 o'clock at night. And I think it was John, John earlier. You know, you go from your kitchen table being the desk to preparing vegetables or whatever for your dinner. So it requires a lot of discipline and the development of an ability to switch off. Which I suspect a lot of people have struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
There are issues that people have struggled.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All what is responsiveness, availability, you know,
yeah.
is different. Ergonomy might be different. These are challenges, no? Sorry. This is working from home. sorry. Yes, sure. I'm thinking also in other people, workers, yeah? To be always available or a long time or communicate from the screen, from apps, from platforms, maybe requires a support, I think, no? Yeah. In some cases. So with this, we come to the challenges. The flexible work arrangements, yeah? Mm-hmm. When they are implementing such flexible working arrangements, what challenges are seen?
Well, I think one of the first challenges, and again, Pedro referred to the you know, trust and things like that. And one of the big challenges, I think, around this is that employers often fear, well, if I let them work from home or I let them work somewhere else, will mm-hmm. they do work? Right? And, mm-hmm. and I had that experience with one of the managers in my organization when we got people working from home. We had to set them up because of COVID. And he came into my office in quite agitated. I said, but how are we going to know that they're doing the work? They're going to be sitting at home, you know. He said, but sure, they could be sitting in the office doing nothing. It's all about how you manage that. And it's all about, you know, how you expect people to work. Like I work with all of my team on the base. I couldn't tell you what they're doing. I know generally what they're doing, but I wouldn't know every 5 minutes what they're doing. I trust them to do what they're doing. And I'll know fairly quickly if they're not doing what they're doing. And I don't really care, you know, how they go about it, in the sense, as long as it's done and it's done properly. So there's that. I suppose that sense of, well, we let them off doing their own thing somewhere else. How do we control that? And there are many workers who have a sense of guilt. I'm at home. I should be working harder. I should be here all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in a way that if they were in the office, they'd wander down the corridor to the coffee machine, or they'd go into somebody else's office and have a chat for 15 minutes, and they wouldn't think anything of it. But if they went into the kitchen and made themselves a cup of coffee and had a couple of biscuits or something, they'd feel guilty. So I suppose it's about trying to create cultures and a culture that supports in a very different way. And many of the hierarchical sort of traditional models of management have been based around control, command and control. You come into the office, you sit there, I can watch you, I can watch you and see that you're working, or at least that you appear to be working. And we moved to a different model, which is facilitated by technology anyhow, where I can't see what you're doing. And I have to trust that you're doing it. No, okay.
There are
ways.
We are again with the culture of trust or control. Yeah.
And so if you need to create that culture of trust and autonomy, and I would very much agree with Petro in that. And in fact, a lot of what we do in the Ideas Institute is based around getting workers and management to work together to problem solve, to develop what we call workplace democracy. It can equally be called autonomy, but it's about allowing people greater opportunity to decide how and what and where they do in their job. Obviously, with the restrictions that are there for the organization in terms of the organization performing service it needs, it does. So culture is certainly one. Well-being is definitely another, because working from home is extremely isolating.
Can be.
If you work if I work at home on my own all day, I don't talk to anybody because there's nobody in the house. My wife is at work, my kids are at school or college, whatever it is. If I do that every day of the week, I can lose that social contact. And interestingly enough, when we brought our staff back and we operated at 3 days, 2 days, the scenario, three days in the office. We found the first day that people came back into the office, they were tentative, they were nervous, they weren't happy about it. But after lunch, lots of them went out to lunch with people that they hadn't seen for 2 years or whatever. And they came back in great form because they discovered one of the great things about being in the office is you can go out to lunch. Our office is in the city centre in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been out for lunch for 2 years like this. It's great. And suddenly they realized there were some advantages to being in the office, and particularly in the sense of well-being. Maybe not everybody needs it, but I certainly need contact with people. A lot of my work involves having cups of tea and coffee with people and sitting in restaurants or canteens and having chats. And it's how I do my work. And I could never, even during COVID, I could never really do a lot of my work online. Yeah. Because of the nature of I suppose what I do, it's about shaking hands and it's about sitting down and being with people and spending time with people. And I think there's always the danger of not just of isolation, but I suppose of a lack of engagement as a team.
Yes.
Now, I personally, and many people may not agree with me, but I like to get my team around the table. A cup of tea in the hand and a chocolate biscuit, and we talk about the match on Sunday and we talk about all sorts of things, and then we get into the work and we'll have a laugh and we look at each other across the table and we'll interact in a way that we just don't really do as well online, and that's very important, I think, for the team and to be part of the team, because you're not in the workplace, and I discovered this a couple of years ago. I became ill and I was off for a number of months. I was quite isolated from what was going on. I wasn't well enough. I physically wasn't well enough to start to keep in contact that much. Mm-hmm. So I was out for about 3 months. And when I came back, I realized there was a gap. People had moved on. People had gone on with things. Yeah. I was trying to catch up and get my head around things I would just sort of naturally have worked through. So certainly I think there's the culture and the well-being, and I suppose I think there are some dangers if you're not visible in the workplace, that can impact decisions around promotion. If you're seen around the office, people say, oh, yeah, I know Rita, she does a great presentation the other day, she does this or she does that, If you're remote all the time, people forget about you. You're distant. So when it comes to a promotion, people are often thinking, well, who are we going to do? Is it going to be John or Brian or Pedro or whoever it is? It's a natural sort of human thing. And one of the concerns I would have, and would still, and I think there's a lot of research needs to be done on this, is because I think women have tended to look more for remote working. And that can be centered around child care issues and, you know, elder care issues, because it often ends up with women more than men. And it's the impact on women and equality. And how will that work if women are not visible in the actual work?
I
don't think we know really at this stage how that's going to pan out. The other concern I think is with developments in AI and how algorithms are going to be used in the context of people not being in the office, how they're going to be used to manage performance, in particular in how to manage performance. How do you manage somebody's performance when they're not in the office? And, you know, how will people be able to know and understand decisions that are being made in relation to assessing their performance if it's been done, say, by an algorithm? So there are, you know, ways in which there's some challenges, I think, within the workplace, because dealing with performance is obviously an issue for every organization.
Thank you very much, Brian. This was very, very interesting to get the perspective from the employee. And I see something very similar, to develop a culture for this kind of hybrid work and having the right policy. And don't forget to train a certain target groups that need it more. So thank you very much.
Thank you.